Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
Next up on Off Duty, all the Zakuski, and most of the vodka, too.
Helping you enjoy the finer points of food and drink. This is Off Duty from the Wall Street Journal.
Hello, and welcome to the Off Duty podcast, where we talk about eating and drinking and often talk to people who help us do those things. I'm Beth Cracklauer.
And I'm Kevin Sintemong. And as I understand it, today's guest has helped a lot of people to eat and drink and do it very well.
That is right. She's the chef owner of the restaurant Kashka in Portland, Oregon, where the vodka flows freely and the food skews Russian. Welcome to the podcast, Bonnie Morales.
Hi. Thanks for having me, guys.
So I just want to start by giving listeners a sense of what Kashka is like. It's a really unique place. So I'm going to read something off of your menu. It says, how to eat like a Russian. Step one, cover every square inch of your table with zakuski. Step two, fill everyone's glasses with their beverage of choice, like vodka or maybe vodka. Step three, search your Soviet soul for a spirited toast. When in doubt, a toast to friends, to life, or simply budim. Did I say that right?
Mm-hmm. Sounds pretty good.
Wow.
Step four, clink, drink, eat, repeat. So that sounds like a party. Is that a pretty accurate description of what a night at Kashka is like?
Yeah, that's what we're going for. In opening the restaurant, we really wanted to make sure that it that there was experiential part of it. That it's not just you order things off the menu and eat them and go. That you leave with feeling, you know, like you've connected with the people that you're eating with. And so we put that little piece on the menu to try to encourage people to eat the way that a lot of people I know eat, and specifically people in my own family eat when they get together.
Right. Now, I know that your family immigrated to the U.S. from the former USSR. Did you always grow up eating that way?
Yeah, as far back as I can remember. My parents immigrated the year before I was born. Mm-hmm. My dad likes to joke that I was made in America, so he never gets tired of telling people that. But they came in 1980, and then after the fall of the curtain, so into the late 80s and then 90s, we just saw a flood of pretty much every single family member that I know of coming through. And so each time somebody new immigrated, there were lots of parties, and it was just a really great sort of close-knit experience. And so there were tons of these big family gatherings all the time, and always, you know, tons of food on the table and merriment. And it's really important in the Russian sort of and Belarusian, which is where my family's from, culture to make sure that when you're eating, you're drinking together. It's not like people cocktail before they eat and then, you know, everybody sits down and buries their head in food. There's a lot of, there's a conversation and a sort of cadence to eating that I loved from growing up.
I know that the name of the restaurant, Kashka, has a particular significance to you. Can you tell us what it means?
Yeah, sure. So the word Kashka means duck. It's a Belarusian word. It also happens to be Ukrainian. But it's the word duck in Russian is utka. That's different. So those languages all share some similarities. But my grandmother, during World War II, was escaping from a ghetto and traveling, you know, by forest and village to make her way as far away from her hometown as possible. And she was traveling through Russia, and a sort of village warden, a Nazi-appointed village warden, caught her and was like, you're Jewish, I can tell. And she's like, no, I'm a Ukrainian peasant traveling through to my in-laws. And he was like, if you're Ukrainian, then, you know, tell me how you say duck in utka. How do you say utka in Ukrainian? And she, you know, she had no idea. She's not Ukrainian. And she just sort of closed her eyes and hoped that it was right and said the Belarusian word. And sure enough, that particular word happens to be the same. And he let her through. And to in opening the restaurant, that I was trying to capture the significance of my family and what I, the culture I grew up in one word. And to me, that story was the way to do it.
Wow, that's mind-blowing.
Yeah,
and
beautiful
incredible
story.
Thank you.
Now, when you were in culinary school, did you know that you'd end up cooking this kind of food?
No. I always thought, until more recently, that this food was embarrassing, terrible. I'd always, like, warn friends coming over when I was, you know, in grade school, uh-huh. you know, like, don't eat anything or come full. I, in culinary school, I kind of thought, oh, I can fix this. You know, I tried to, like, Frenchify everything. I'd, like, make things that my mom would do and then, like, you know, take extra steps and clarify and do all of these more French-driven techniques and not necessarily with better results. But when I met my husband, we were working together at restaurants in Chicago. He would come to my parents' house for dinner and things like that, and I'd give him that usual spiel about, you know, don't eat anything or come full. I'm pretty sure he wasn't faking it, but he got really excited about the food in a way that kind of changed the way I thought about it. I had a paradigm shift through his eyes, you know, which is really interesting.
Mm-hmm. And he's your partner in the restaurant as well as life now, right?
Yes.
I want to actually get down to nuts and bolts a little and deconstruct the menu a little. First of all, can you define zakuski for us? That's a big section of the menu right away.
It is. Zakuski are dishes that are meant to go with drinking. They're sort of your cold appetizers, but there are always many of them on a table. Traditionally in someone's home, you would have as many zakuski as you, and we try to reference that on the menu with fill your every inch of your table. When you go to someone's home, you traditionally have a table filled with as many dishes as you can fit on a table. And those are your zakuski, things like pickles or, smoked fish, cured meats, salads. In sort of the rhythm of dining, the majority of your time is spent over zakuski. People, like I was mentioning, there's an importance to toasting and drinking with eating. And so there's this sort of rhythm of having a few bites of zakuski, everybody toasts, you clink glasses, you drink, and then you repeat, you have more zakuski right after. And that takes up the bulk of the meal to the point where, and I mean, not to say that main courses aren't delicious, they are, but that ends up being sort of secondary almost to this like big spread. So that's, we honor that by making half the menu full of these zakuski.
Does it drive you nuts when people call it Russian tapas?
A little bit. I mean, I love tapas. There's nothing wrong with them, but that's, you know, it's its own culture, and they have their own, I mean, they probably think it's insensitive for tapas to be called any other, country, French tapas or, Georgian tapas. That's probably offensive in just the same way that, you know, I wouldn't want to call zakuski Russian tapas.
I do love, though, that all these different cultures have a tradition of having drinking and eating being totally intermingled. When I was traveling in Greece, I learned this term they had for drinking without eating, and they called it dry hammer. You don't do that. You don't want the dry hammer. You always have to have something to nibble on while you're drinking. And I like that. I think that is wise on many levels.
So wise. My dad, who is a very smart man when it comes to drinking, he's had many years under his belt, is always confused about cocktailing. He doesn't understand how people can stand around and not eat and drink. And he actually, like when he is in those situations, it's so funny to watch him drink a cocktail because he shoots it. Because he treats it like a shot, and then you're gonna eat something, you know, and but then the food's not there. So.
Oh yes,
very dangerous. Dry hammer.
Dry hammer. Don't do it. So There's this video that Eater did at your restaurant called One Night at Kashka that I've watched actually a ton of times because it's fascinating, and it takes us through an entire evening of service with you and your staff and your customers, which is really great. And, you know, I think my favorite part of it might be watching how the dumplings get made.
Yeah, I'm super thrilled to have them here. So exciting. And they were just such great sports. And I'm so happy that they captured that. I mean, we make dumplings here every day in our prep kitchen. And but they just made it. I mean, it is a beautiful thing, but they just really made it just gorgeous. And John, who was the prep cook they shot, was such a good sport about it. Yeah, the Russian small dumpling is called, they are called pelmeni. Pelmeni is the singular. So pelmeni are always filled with meat and then served with, they're boiled and served with vinegar and smetana, which is sour cream, and butter and things like that. And then there are Ukrainian dumplings called vareniki, which we make, and we do traditional fillings of tvorog, which is a sort of farmer's cheese, and we make sour cherry ones. And then, you know, every once in a while we'll do something fun and special, but we really like to stick to the traditional varieties and that part of the menu. But those are really, really important to us. Actually, my husband Israel and I, when we were first dreaming this up back when we were, you know, back in Chicago and still dating, I used to keep pelmeni in my freezer all the time from the grocery store because they're considered to be kind of this like bachelor food that everybody keeps in their freezer in Russia, and you buy them in huge bulk quantities. We would come home late from restaurants and just boil off bowls of these and just sit down and sort of forget the world. And I mean, they have this like super, super comforting, satisfying quality.
Yeah, this sounds delicious. Did you find that Portlanders also took to this style of cooking right away?
You know, yes. In many ways, I don't know that it would have happened the same way in other cities, because I feel like Portlanders are just so excited to try something new, and I love my city for that. There's a dish called herring under a fur coat that we have on the menu that it's a very classic dish. But obviously, as the name implies, herring is the main feature. And I did not want to put that on the opening menu at all. And so there was something that happened. I don't remember exactly what, where it did end up going on. And I was like, oh, it's going to be a dog. No one's going to get it. It's going to scare people away. And honestly, it's probably the most ordered dish. It gets written up all the time. It's a huge deal. And I'm so excited that not only can we actually have herring on our menu, but people come here asking for it. That makes me so happy.
Well, how can you not order something called herring in a fur coat? You have to see what that is as soon as you hear the name.
And it has pink mayonnaise on top, so, you know,
exactly.
Gotta try that.
Win-win. I do think there is a real appetite for this kind of food right now. I mean, I'm sort of biased because I live in Pittsburgh, which is a very Slavic city anyway. A lot of the immigrants who settled here came from that part of the world. But we are finally seeing some of the younger chefs in the city embrace this kind of cooking. And it makes sense in a way because it kind of dovetails with other things in the food culture. It's really wholesome. It's full of plants and herbs and all the fermentation. You know, pickling is so huge. And smoke and all these things that give kind of pretty simple dishes, in a sense, or dishes that don't have too many ingredients, a ton of flavor.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, the flavors are really like very clean. We don't have, you know, curries with 60 ingredients in them, or, you know, fish sauce and soy sauce to play with. And so there's, I mean, those things are fantastic and delicious, but there's something really sort of refreshing to have just a simpler, palate to work with. I think it could be seen as constricting, like more challenging to make flavorful, but I think when you're forced to sort of simplify things and keep it to these sort of, like you're saying, simple plants and a little bit of fermentation or a little bit of smoke. It's amazing how much the ingredients can shine through, and it's really comforting.
Right. Now, so much of what we're hearing about healthy eating right now seems very much in line with this food, right? Eat more whole grains, eat more plants, take care of your gut with fermented foods. But that's not really the point, right? Is healthiness, though. Or is it?
Well, I mean, I think the point is to eat well and not think about it too much. You know, if it's just naturally what you do, and to worry about does it have gluten in it or not? Does it have dairy in it or not? You know, I think if it's all balanced and it's all whole, then it's good for you. I mean, you know, things like sauerkraut, like my father eats sauerkraut every single morning. They make their own sauerkraut. And he, you know, ever since he started doing that, he totally 100% stopped having heartburn, for example. Like treating your body. My mom drinks kefir every night. She's been doing that ever since I can remember to sort of help, you know, her stomach. My mom makes a called sibukthorn, oblipisa in Russian. It's Siberian berry. And I think it's starting to get a little bit of a following in the United States now as a sort of super berry. But my mom makes a syrup with it, and all of her grandchildren, she gives them a spoon of it every morning, when she sees them. To kind of ward off illness. They all call it, you know, her miracle baba's juice. But these sorts of whole foods and things that my family's been using to, you know, keep their bodies healthy, I feel like that's a really important part of the diet, in addition to just eating everything, but eating it in moderation and making sure that it's whole.
Wow. Well, it's incredibly appealing, as is the idea of not overthinking it. I love that. You can find listeners four wonderful recipes that Bonnie shared with us in the off-duty section at wsj.com/food. They're really great springtime food to kind of tide you over until you can get to Portland and eat at Kashka, which is truly wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing those with us, Bonnie, and thank you for taking the time to talk to us today.
It was my pleasure, guys. Thank you so much.
And that wraps up another Off Duty podcast. For more podcasts, check us out at wsj.com/podcast. Follow us on Twitter at WSJPodcast and become a subscriber on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and now look for us on the Google Play Music app on Android devices. And if you like what you hear, tell a friend.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.